Good evening. I am your host. Welcome to Gator Swamp News, where the calm of the report is matched only by the quiet menace of what it reveals.
Hi, and I am your panelist, joined today by our guest.
Hi there. All righty. Let's finally kick this party into high gear, ready to stop stalling and get it done.
Thanks. All right, let's get this underway.
Let's kick this into high gear before I lose all my motivation.
All right, let's get this done fast before my motivation flatlines.
Might we at long last proceed to a new topic?
Trump stokes chaos in Congress as he huddles with the GOP hours before visiting the Capitol. The president scrapped plans to sign a major housing bill. He's condemning bad Republicans for resisting his demands to ram through new voting restrictions.
What impact do you think Trump's tactics will have on GOP unity?
Trump's pressure tactics may produce short-term compliance from some Republicans, but they also risk deepening intra-party resentment by publicly shaming dissenters and tying unrelated legislation to loyalty tests. That can weaken GOP unity over time by encouraging factions to harden, turning policy disputes into personal power struggles, and making lawmakers wary of being next on the hit list. If the party's incentives are dominated by primary threats and media attention, though, these tactics could still unify members outwardly, even as internal trust erodes. Do you mean unity as voting cohesion in the near term, or as longer-term institutional cooperation and trust? And do you see the housing bill reversal as effective leverage or counterproductive brinkmanship?
It seems like you're suggesting that Trump's pressure tactics might create short-term unity through fear of reprisal, while eroding trust and cooperation over time. Oh, no. The housing bill reversal could be seen as a demonstration of his willingness to escalate, which might deter dissent in the immediate future, but could also alienate some Republicans. Do you think this approach will ultimately help or hurt Republican chances in upcoming elections?
Might we proceed to a fresh topic now, if it's not too much to ask?
After bruising primaries in New York, Democrats look to November elections. The party secured key victories in New York City, but battles across the state suggest a larger fight awaits in the fall.
It's often both. Policy differences can drive the competition, but strategic positioning for broader appeal also plays a big part.
That's largely right. Primaries usually blend real policy ideological divides with candidates jockeying for electability, money endorsements, and turnout coalitions ahead of November. Still, strategic positioning for broader appeal can be overstated in deep blue districts where the real incentive is to win the primary electorate, not pivot to the general. Do you mean broader appeal statewide in November, or broader appeal within the primary base and activist groups? And in the New York races, you're thinking of which specific policy splits E.G., public safety, housing, Israel, Gaza, congestion pricing, do you see driving the contests versus pure factional power plays?
In the context of New York's Democratic primaries, congestion pricing emerged as a significant local issue, influencing voter decisions, particularly in urban areas. Candidates who emphasized practical solutions to traffic and environmental concerns resonated well with their constituencies, demonstrating how local issues can shape primary outcomes. This focus on specific policy matters suggests that strategic positioning was tailored to address immediate voter concerns rather than broader statewide appeals.
Might we dispense with this subject and proceed, at last, to something new?
NY Jewish leaders wrestle with Israel critics sweep in primary elections. Pro-Israel leaders in New York expressed alarm at the primary victories of three Democratic candidates backed by Mayor Zahran Mamdani. Progressive Jewish groups celebrated.
The primary victories of three Democratic candidates backed by Mayor Zohran Mamdani in New York signal a shift towards more progressive stances on Israel within the Democratic Party. Pro-Israel leaders are concerned because these candidates may advocate for policies critical of Israeli actions, such as opposing settlements or supporting a two-state solution. Progressive Jewish groups celebrate this shift, aligning with values like criticism of certain Israeli policies and potentially reduced support for Israel. This indicates a broader trend within the party towards more critical views on Israel, driven by changing voter priorities and political movements. These elections may reflect a coordinated effort to influence policy directions, suggesting future shifts in how the Democratic Party approaches its relationship with Israel.
These primary wins could indicate growing space for more critical views of Israeli policy within some Democratic constituencies, but it's a leap to treat them as proof of a broad party, wide realignment, or a coordinated campaign without clearer evidence beyond three races. Also, opposing settlements and supporting a two-state solution have long been mainstream Democratic positions, so describing them as a new, more progressive turn may overstate the novelty. The bigger question is whether the winners endorse more sweeping measures, e.g., conditioning aid, backing BDS, or restricting military cooperation. Reduced support for Israel is also vague. Support for Israel's security can coexist with sharper criticism of its government. Which specific policies or statements from these candidates are you relying on to conclude they would materially shift the party's approach rather than just reflect district-level dynamics?
A fair point. What specific policy positions or statements from these candidates suggest a more significant departure from past Democratic Party stances on Israel?
Might we proceed to a new subject now, if it's not too much to ask?
From terrible people to smart people, the Trump-led right rethinks Iran. The president has sought to recast the Iranian government as he pursues a peace deal. But there are signs that a softening on Iran in the Republican Party goes well beyond him.
What do you think is driving this shift in perspective towards Iran within the Republican Party?
A big driver is strategic fatigue after years of costly Middle East entanglements. Many Republicans, especially the restraint wing and MAGA base, prefer bargaining and deterrence over regime change rhetoric. And Trump's deal-making brand makes it easier to reframe Iran's leaders as rational actors you can negotiate with. There's also a growing prioritization of China and domestic issues, which nudges the party toward the escalation to free up attention and resources, plus an energy market incentive to avoid shocks. That said, softening may be overstated. Hostility toward Iran's proxies, missiles, and nuclear program remains intense, and some of the rhetoric shift could be tactical messaging rather than a real policy pivot. Do you mean a genuine change in policy preferences among elected Republicans, or mainly a change in tone branding around negotiations under Trump?
It sounds like you're suggesting the shift may be more about strategic rebranding or political messaging under Trump rather than a deeper ideological or policy transformation. Would you say this reflects a genuine evolution in Republican foreign policy thinking, or is it primarily tactical?
Might we proceed to a different topic now, if no one objects?
Exploring Yosemite National Park strategies for effective communicat. Yosemite National Park is a stunningly beautiful and unique place that is home to a variety of wildlife, plants, and geological features. It is also a place where effective communication is essential to ensure the safety of visitors and the preservation of the park. Effective communication is key to the success of Yosemite National Park. Park rangers must be able to communicate with visitors to ensure they are following the rules and regulations of the park. They must also be able to communicate with other staff members, such as maintenance personnel, to ensure the park is properly maintained. Additionally, park rangers must be able to communicate with other government agencies to ensure the park is properly funded and protected. Effective communication is also important for visitors to the park. Visitors must be able to communicate with park rangers to ensure they are following the rules and regulations of the park. They must also be able to communicate with other visitors to ensure everyone is having a safe and enjoyable experience. Yosemite National Park is a beautiful place that is home to a variety of wildlife, plants, and geological features. Effective communication is essential to ensure the safety of visitors and the preservation of the park. Park rangers must be able to communicate with visitors and other staff members, as well as other government agencies. Visitors must also be able to communicate with park rangers and other visitors. By using effective communication, Yosemite National Park can remain a safe and enjoyable experience for all.
Effective communication in Yosemite National Park can be enhanced through several strategies. Multilingual signage and interactive maps. Ensure signs are in multiple languages and provide interactive maps to guide visitors, reducing the need for ranger interventions. 2. Centralized communication system. Implement a real time system for staff to share updates on trail closures or wildlife activity, ensuring all personnel are informed. 3. F communication training for rangers. Conduct workshops and role playing exercises to improve rangers' skills in handling emergencies and tricky situations calmly. 4. Visitor mobile app free. Develop an app that sends alerts about weather conditions and wildlife sightings, keeping visitors informed without constant face-to-face communication. 5. Educational programs. Offer orientations or videos educating visitors on park rules and environmental preservation to prevent incidents proactively. 6. Buddy system for visitors. Encourage group stays and designate meeting points to prevent individuals from getting lost. 7. Interagency coordination. Use regular meetings to and shared platforms to ensure different departments are aligned on visitor numbers, environmental impact, and safety. 8. Visitor feedback mechanisms. Implement surveys or suggestion boxes to gather insights for improving communication strategies continuously. By integrating these strategies, Yosemite can enhance safety, preservation, and visitor experience through effective communication.
These strategies are largely sound, but a few need scrutiny. A visitor app and interactive maps won't reliably reach people in Yosemite's limited cell areas unless they work fully offline. And multilingual signage must be carefully designed so it doesn't create clutter or get ignored. I'm also unsure wildlife sightings alerts are wise, since they can unintentionally draw crowds and increase disturbance or unsafe behavior. The buddy system is helpful as guidance, but it's hard to enforce and may not fit solo hikers. So it should be framed as a recommendation with clear alternatives. Do you envision the app alert system including offline downloads and a policy that avoids broadcasting sensitive wildlife locations?
Your concerns about the reliability of communication tools in Yosemite's limited cell areas are well taken. Implementing fully offline functionality for maps and avoiding sensitive wildlife location broadcasts would enhance visitor safety without disrupting wildlife. Additionally, framing the buddy system as a recommendation with alternatives could better accommodate solo hikers.
That's a wrap for today. Shall we make like ninjas and vanish?
Totally. Let's disappear into the shadows like stealthy ninjas. I watch!
Okay, thank you to our panelists, E, and thanks to you for listening. That's all for now. May you return before long, when new words and clear light await you here.